Mansoor, we're going to do a second part of this interview and post it at democracynow.org. You just wrote a comment is free op-ed piece in The Guardian about a Biden administration decision around the artwork of the Guantanamo prisoners. And we're going to talk about that and also show more of your images that you drew while in Guantanamo. Yes, Mansoor Daifi is a former Guantanamo prisoner, detainee 441, imprisoned without charge for 14 years and 7 months before being released in 2016 to Serbia. We spoke to him in Belgrade. His memoir is titled Don't Forget Us Here, Lost and Found at Guantanamo. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Currently accepting applications for a digital fellow. Go to democracynow.org for more information. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Lady Sings the Blues, a tribute to Billie Holiday 2023. On Saturday, April 8th, from 8 p.m. to 10:45 p.m. at the Alberta Rose Theater in Portland. The 16th annual Billie Holiday tribute brings together musicians of many genres to pay tribute to influential jazz singer and songwriter Billie Holiday. Performances feature Marsha Hocker, LaRonda Steele, Arietta Ward, and more. Again, that's the 16th annual Billie Holiday Tribute Night, Lady Sings the Blues, on Saturday, April 8th, from 8 p.m. to 10:45 p.m. at the Alberta Rose Theater, 3000 Northeast Alberta Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, at least three Portlanders die of overdoses in just 12 hours over the weekend. Washington State pulls record money from polluters to reinvest in climate action. And in international news, an American reporter for the Wall Street Journal was arrested in Russia on espionage charges. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, April 3rd, 2023. I'm Michelle Coppola. Friday turned out to be a very busy day for the Portland Police Central Precinct, who responded to no less than 11 calls for service related to narcotics overdoses in downtown in a 12-hour period. At least three deaths were reported from those calls, which occurred between 10:29 a.m. and 11:08 p.m. The overdose-reversing drug Narcan was used as a life-saving measure on six of those incidents. Four of the calls occurred in less than an hour. Portland police say the majority of the overdoses involved opioid narcotics, and they believe most were the result of fentanyl usage. On the Portland Police Bureau podcast, Talking Beat, Lieutenant Chris Lindsay of the PPP's Narcotic and Organized Crime Unit explained one of the main reasons for the rise of fentanyl in Portland and nationwide.
The reason for this rise is that it is, for a couple of reasons, it's extremely cheap. It costs $1,000 to produce a kilogram of fentanyl. That's enough for 500,000 lethal doses. Powder fentanyl goes for about $1,300 an ounce. And it only takes a very, very small amount for someone to get the high or the sensation they're looking for and or to overdose. So imagine taking, an ounce of fentanyl and then taking some kind of mixer like acetaminophen, aspirin, baking soda, baking powder, anything, and taking just a tiny, tiny bit of fentanyl and mixing it together and crushing that and making a pill. Now what you've got is you have thousands of lethal doses that could be sold for $5 a pop. So it's extremely cheap and it's very, very, very potent. So you're getting a really intense and extreme high from this small pill that costs you $5 to $10.
That was Portland Police Lieutenant Chris Lindsay speaking about the rise and risk of fentanyl on the PPP podcast Talking Beat. Portland police stress that calling 911 when you recognize the signs of an overdose does save lives, and that Oregon law establishes immunity for drug-related offenses for those who call for emergency assistance. A Wall Street Journal reporter was arrested by the Russian Federal Security Services on espionage charges on Thursday. The Wall Street Journal reports that 31-year-old Evan Gerskovich has been accused of spying for the United States. The publication and the U.S. government vehemently denied those allegations. In a White House press briefing on Thursday, Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre strongly condemned the arrest and warned Americans in Russia to leave for their own safety.
This espionage charges are ridiculous. The targeting of American citizens by Russian government is unacceptable. We condemn the detention of Mr. Gerskovich in the strongest terms. We also condemn the Russian government's continued targeting and repression of journalists. I want to strongly reiterate that Americans should heed the U.S. government's warning to not travel to Russia. U.S. citizens residing or traveling in Russia should depart immediately, as the State Department continues to advise.
That was White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre speaking to reporters last Thursday, just after Gerskovich was arrested. The U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken made a rare call to Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov yesterday, expressing, quote, grave concern about the arrest and calling for his release. The Associated Press reports that on the call, Lavrov claimed without evidence that Gerskovich was, quote, caught red-handed. The Wall Street Journal notes that Gerskovich joins a growing number of Americans who have been detained by foreign governments in recent years on what the U.S. considers to be fake or politically motivated charges. Ahead of Donald Trump's arraignment on Tuesday, former Attorney General Bill Barr says Trump shouldn't take the stand, and Democrats want to compromise on gun control. With those stories and more, it's Alex Gonzalez with 2023 Talks.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
He doesn't want to charge people with felonies. So now he turns around purely for political purposes and indicts a former president on misdemeanor offenses that they're straining to try to convert into felonies.
In a speech to a conservative audience, likely presidential candidate Florida Governor Ron DeSantis didn't mention former President Donald Trump by name, but DeSantis called Trump's indictment a weaponization of the law for political purposes. Sources familiar with the closed indictment say Trump has been charged with about 24 counts related to hiding payments to a porn star. Trump, who's already said he's running for the White House, is set to be arraigned on Tuesday in the first of several possible criminal cases. Sunday on Fox News, Trump's former Attorney General Bill Barr said Trump's lack of self-control makes it dangerous for him to take the stand in the New York hush money case.
Generally, I think it's a bad idea to go on the stand, and I think it's particularly a bad idea for Trump because he lacks all self-control, and it'd be very difficult to prepare him and keep him testifying in a prudent fashion.
During a Sunday interview, Connecticut Senator Chris Murphy said there simply aren't the votes in Congress for a federal ban on assault rifles, but he is asking lawmakers to consider a bill that would require training before their purchase.
Ultimately, I want those weapons off the street, but I think we'd be a safer nation if we required just a little bit of training before you bought the most dangerous weapons commercially available.
Murphy said it's unconscionable for the weapons of war to circulate following the shooting at a private Christian school in Nashville, which left six dead. According to the Gun Violence Archive, there have been 130 mass shootings so far this year, more than one per day. New York Governor Kathy Hochul met with education and public safety officials Friday to discuss the more than 200 incidents in the state where someone has made a prank phone call to a school reporting an active shooter.
But I want parents to know that we are taking every single incident very seriously. We treat it as if it's real, but the reality is this is meant to disrupt and cause chaos in our school system and indeed society.
Hochul also said that since the mass shooting at a Buffalo grocery store, the state has issued over 7,000 red flag orders. Under state law, extreme risk orders aim to alert officials about someone who has the potential to harm themselves or others. Finally, former Republican Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson is the latest politician to announce he is running for president in 2024. He is the fourth Republican to announce a campaign following former President Trump, former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley, and venture capitalist Vivek Ramaswamy. I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our A-Trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
In other news around the country, a Virginia teacher who was shot and wounded by a six-year-old first-grade student filed a lawsuit today seeking $40 million in damages from school officials. The lawsuit alleges gross negligence on the part of the school for allegedly ignoring multiple warnings that the boy had a gun on the day of the shooting and that he was in a, quote, violent mood. It names the Newport News School Board and several school officials as defendants. Abby Zwerner is a 25-year-old teacher at Richneck Elementary School in Newport News, Virginia. She was shot on the hand and chest on January 6th. She was sitting at a reading table in her classroom at the time. Zwerner subsequently spent almost 2 weeks in the hospital and has had four surgeries since she was shot. No one, including the boy, has been charged in the shooting. The school superintendent was fired by the school board after the shooting, and the assistant principal resigned. The school's principal was reassigned to another job within the school district. The board also voted to install metal detectors in every school in the district and to purchase clear backpacks for all students. Zwerner's attorneys say all of the defendants knew the boy had a history of random violence at school and at home. They say he choked his kindergarten teacher the year before. The school officials removed the boy from Richneck and sent him to another school for the remainder of that year, but then allowed him to return for first grade in the fall of 2022. The lawsuit says, quote, all defendants knew that John Doe attacked students and teachers alike, and his motivation to injure was directed toward anyone in his path, both in and out of school, and was not limited to teachers while at the school, end quote. It adds that after he returned in 2022, he chased students around the playground with a belt and was cursing staff and teachers. The boy's parents did not agree for him to be put in special education classes where he would be with other students with behavioral issues. Zwerner is alleging permanent bodily injuries, physical pain, mental anguish, lost earnings, and other damages. The suit seeks $40 million in compensatory damages. The Newport News prosecutor will not criminally charge the boy because the six-year-old would not understand the legal system and what the charge means. Washington State's Cap and Invest program raised $300 million in its first auction for permits to emit carbon. Now they're ready to invest. Eric Tegedoff spoke with the environmental advocacy organizers in the state to learn more.
Washington State's Cap and Invest program has held its first carbon auction and is getting ready to invest these funds in climate action. The auction raised $300 million, and all its permits for emitting carbon sold out. The funds will go to such projects as building clean energy and reducing emissions from buildings and transportation. Kelly Hall with the nonprofit Climate Solutions says the success of the auction is a good sign.
This auction shows that there's a strong market and that we can anticipate significant investments in future biennia as well.
Washington's auctions will take place four times a year. At least 35% of the revenue collected will go toward projects that benefit communities disproportionately affected by pollution. Which projects are funded will become clear once state lawmakers settle on a budget toward the end of the session this month. David Mendoza with the Nature Conservancy in Washington says the state is looking to link up with other cap and trade markets, including in California and Quebec. But he notes key restrictions will guide that process.
If we link markets, there has to be analysis of whether linking will have a negative impact on overburdened communities in either jurisdiction. So not just Washington considerations, but what would be the impact on communities in California as well?
Hall says it's an exciting time to live in Washington as this program starts up.
We are on the brink of actually seeing a lot of these benefits, and right now it's up to the legislature to make sure that communities can actually feel the benefits of clean energy and that we're directing these investments to communities so that clean energy is accessible and affordable to all.
The Cap and Invest program is designed to help Washington State meet its climate goals. Lawmakers have set a goal to cut carbon emissions 95% below 1990 levels by the year 2050. For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff. This story was produced with original reporting from Kate Yoder for Grist.
For all the backcountry campers and backpackers out there, permits for camping and multi-day hiking in three of Oregon's most popular wilderness areas go on sale tomorrow at 7 a.m. The permits are required to camp and hike in the Mount Jefferson, Three Sisters, and Mount Washington wilderness areas. The Statesman Journal reports that there will be some differences this year with regard to day use permits, however. Unlike previous years, day hikers do not need to make advanced reservations. This marks the third year for the limited entry system that was put in place by the U.S. Department of Agriculture Forest Service in order to help preserve these wild spaces and to better manage the impact of human recreation. Permit season lasts from June 15th through October 15th, and you can get more information and purchase permits at recreation.gov. Listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Coast Range Radio. They'll be speaking with the Stand Up to Factory Farms Coalition about standing up to Big Ag in Oregon. At 6, it's Labor Radio. At 6:30, Prison Pipeline. Then at 7, LTAR. Let's talk about race. Your weather forecast tonight will be cloudy with an overnight low of 35. Tomorrow, cloudy again with a daytime high of 49. Today in history, in 2016, the Panama Papers were leaked. They contained over 11 million leaked documents about offshore entities. It included financial information about certain rich people and public officials, and included information about tax fraud, tax evasion, and evading international sanctions. The quote of the day is from American historian who is often called the father of black history, Carter G. Woodson, who died on this day in 1950. He wrote, quote, "Philosophers have long conceded that every man has two educators, that which is given to him, and the other, that which he gives himself. Of the two kinds, the latter is by far the more desirable. Indeed, all that is most worthy in man, he must work out and conquer for himself. It is that which constitutes our real and best nourishment. What we are merely taught seldom nourishes the mind like that which we teach ourselves." Suspected migrants were found dead on a First Nation reserve that straddles the United States and Canada on the St. Lawrence River. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A First Nation on a reserve that straddles the border between Canada and the United States has been shaken by the deaths of 8 suspected migrants. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, the bodies were found in the St. Lawrence River.
Details are still sketchy and only 2 of the victims have been identified. But the group had apparently tried to cross into the United States from Canada across the St. Lawrence River in an area where the Akwesasne Mohawk Reserve straddles the international border. The First Nation borders on Quebec, Ontario, and New York State. Sean DeLude is the chief of the Akwesasne Mohawk Police Service. He says 8 bodies, including 2 children, have now been recovered after an overturned boat was found in the water late last week.
All are believed to have been attempting illegal entry into the United States from Canada. The circumstances surrounding the deaths continue to be investigated. Akwesasne Mohawk Police are working with Immigration Canada and Homeland Security to confirm their identities, so that the next of kin notifications can be made.
Officials say the boat was too small to be able to carry safely 7 or 8 people. Elders at the First Nation say the St. Lawrence is always a major concern, especially with spring runoff. The current is stronger and the water ice cold. Some say they wouldn't venture out on the river until at least May. Officials say at least 80 people have been intercepted as they tried to cross into the U.S. since January. The 8 victims are apparently from 2 families, one Romanian, the other Indian. Advocates for asylum seekers say since the closing of the irregular crossing at Roxham Road less than a week ago, desperate migrants trying to cross to either country will try more hazardous methods of doing so. Still missing is 30-year-old Casey Oakes, a resident of the Akwesasne First Nation. Police would not say if his disappearance and the bodies found in the marsh along the river are linked. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
A grant is helping student parents at a tribal college in northwestern Montana. Eric Tegedoff has more.
The Aspen Institute has announced Blackfeet Community College and seven other institutes around the country have joined the Black and Native Family Futures Fund. Linda Surasine is a counselor at the school and is overseeing the $75,000 grant. She says COVID-19 hit the Blackfeet Reservation hard, and many students are grieving.
To be able to get good grades and all that, you need to have some peace in your life. And I always feel that if we're not well mentally and emotionally and physically, then we're not going to be able to succeed.
The grant comes with technical assistance to implement programs as well. Blackfeet Community College is setting up the Native Student Parent Program, which will help young mothers with child care, food, and transportation. Racine says elders also are helping with the program. She says workshops for the young mothers include making traditional outfits for their kids.
We just don't want our people to lose their cultural and their traditional way of life. So it's very important that we integrate it in everything we do.
The eight institutions that received funding are historically Black colleges and universities and tribal colleges and universities. Support for this reporting was provided by Lumina Foundation. I'm Eric Tegedoff.
The Institute of American Indian Arts in Santa Fe, New Mexico, is adding a health and wellness management program to its academic roster. IAIA announced over the weekend the new Be Well program. Students will soon be able to earn a degree in bee therapy. Classes include Be Here, Now Meditation, and Floral Arrangement. The program will be housed in a building named The Hive, Healthy Individuals Vibing Energetically. Construction is expected to start on the building this spring, and a full list of courses in the program will soon be released. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
The number of people who traveled on U.S. airlines last year was below pre-pandemic 2019 levels, yet consumer complaints about air travel in 2022 nearly quadrupled compared with 2019. That's according to a new report from the U.S. Public Interest Research Group. Catherine Carley has more.
The number of people who traveled on U.S. airlines last year remained below pre-pandemic levels, but consumer complaints about the airlines nearly quadrupled compared with 2019. A new report compiling data from the Department of Transportation shows travelers' top complaints related to flight delays or cancellations and a lack of refunds. Massachusetts Public Interest Research Group Consumer Program Director Deirdre Cummings says airlines are making short-sighted decisions about staffing and scheduling, leading to a surge in complaints.
While there was a slight drop from 2021, it's still 10 times more the number of complaints about refunds compared to 2019.
Airlines canceled more than 190,000 flights last year, or nearly 3% of all flights scheduled. The data compiled does not include the month of December, when thousands of flights were canceled, causing so many complaints that they couldn't be tallied in time for the year-end report. The airlines are now gearing up for the busiest travel season in 4 years, with some 78 million passengers projected in April. Another top complaint among travelers has been lost or damaged luggage, including wheelchairs and scooters. Cummings says federal officials need to step up their game to protect air travelers.
It really comes down to how the airlines are running their operation, and then what sort of oversight is there and what sort of penalties.
Cummings says while travelers can protect themselves by paying with a credit card or traveling earlier in the day, the Department of Transportation has proposed some fixes, including an online dashboard to view airlines' policies prior to booking and requiring airlines to inform passengers whose flights are canceled that they are entitled to a full refund. For Commonwealth News Service, I'm Catherine Carley.
It's National Fair Housing Month, and while the Fair Housing Act has protected people from discrimination for 55 years, officials say it could do more. There's also new attacks on the policy in Montana. Eric Tegedoff has the details.
April is National Fair Housing Month, and this marks 55 years since the Federal Fair Housing Act was signed into law. The act gives people an avenue to address discrimination that prevents them from securing housing. Pam Bean with Montana Fair Housing says the law could go further and protect people regardless of where they get their income.
For instance, folks that might be lower income, but their sources of support, such as having food stamps, might be able to be blended in as income and allowing them then to qualify for the housing product they're looking at.
Montana has passed its own housing anti-discrimination rules with the Montana Human Rights Act. Bean says her organization has events planned throughout April to celebrate Fair Housing Month. Montana lawmakers have passed bills this session that target members of the LGBTQ community, including legislation that bans gender-affirming care for youth. Bean says it's disappointing.
It's very hard for me to wake up every day sometimes and think that a state that I love this much and a country I love is putting so much effort into minimizing the rights of people.
Another measure making its way through the Capitol would define sex in a way that prohibits people from bringing claims of sexual orientation or gender identity discrimination in areas such as employment and housing. But Bean notes it's still illegal to discriminate against people based on sexual orientation or gender identity when it comes to housing.
Even though victims of discrimination that are LGBTQ+ may not have state protections, they still have federal protections, and complaints could still be filed at that level.
For Big Sky Connection, I'm Eric Tegedov.
A new report from Generation Hope finds college-level student parents are in need of better access to childcare. But to do this, student parents and schools need to overcome a series of challenges in their way. Edwin J. Vieira has more.
A new report highlights the need for better access to childcare for college-level student parents. The report from Generation Hope finds 92% of student parents surveyed were either unaware of on-campus childcare options or didn't have access to them. To get by, 71% said they rely on family, friends, and other forms of informal childcare. Some schools do have childcare on campus, but Nicole Lynn Lewis with Generation Hope says there are numerous reasons student parents aren't able to use it.
They don't use it for a variety of reasons, ranging from there is a long waiting list, or it's too expensive, or it's not offered during times when I need care.
One way to ensure parents have access to childcare is for officials to provide funding to colleges for better childcare programs. The Department of Education's Childcare Access Means Parents in Schools grant program allocates funding to colleges and universities for just such a purpose. In 2022, the program awarded 301 grants, averaging over $270,000 each. Beyond funding, colleges are also faced with a lack of data about how many students are also parents. Lewis thinks this data can help colleges understand that population's needs and what can be helpful to them. But she says campuses must work together with student parents to develop these solutions.
We also want to see student parents at the table, helping to make these decisions, helping to craft solutions. What we see when things fail is that we're not engaging the people who are most impacted.
She adds making childcare more accessible also means making it more affordable. Over 80% of student parents surveyed reported an annual household income under $30,000, but a 2023 report from the Economic Policy Institute finds the average annual cost of infant childcare in Virginia is over $14,000. Equaling over $1,100 a month. I'm Edwin J. Vieira, Virginia News Connection. Support for this reporting was provided by Lumina Foundation.
Free employee parking is costing the climate and commuters, but parking cash-out laws can help more workers use climate-friendly transit instead of cars. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Many businesses pay for space in a garage or lot so employees can park near the office. But Alan Greenberg of the Federal Highway Administration says when employers provide free parking, it comes at a cost to the climate and other commuters.
They're encouraging employees to drive to work in congested cities and largely to block buses filled with low-income workers who are also trying to get to work, who are using the infrastructure much more efficiently.
So some places, such as Washington, D.C. and California, now have what are known as parking cash-out laws. The details vary, but these laws essentially require that if companies pay for employee parking, they must offer equivalent benefits to non-drivers. That can take the form of a public transit pass, or, for employees who walk or bike to work, cash equal to the market value of a parking spot. Greenberg says employees might use that cash for a new bicycle, or put it towards rent, so they can afford to live close enough to walk to work.
What we're talking about here is not a new cost, not a burden, but rather an opportunity.
By encouraging people to get out of their cars, parking cash-out programs can help reduce traffic and carbon pollution. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Monday, April 3rd, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem and Michelle Coppola. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Eric Tegadoff, Antonia Gonzalez, Catherine Carley, Edwin G. Vieira, Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and Alex Gonzalez. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Michelle Coppola. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, we would certainly appreciate it. You can just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Coast Range Radio. Have a great night.
Welcome to Coast Range Radio, a production of the Coast Range Association. I'm your host, Michael Gaskill. We talk a lot on this show and in the Coast Range Association work more broadly about the invasive plague of global capital in our timberlands and just about all other aspects of our world. And one of the key front lines in the fight against that invasion is mega factory farms, and the Pacific Northwest is a huge land grab target for big ag. I want to say right up top, this episode is not about whether you should eat meat or not. No matter where you stand on that, factory